Another digital edit will bring me to my next guests, who I'm putting into the Glitz programme, even though they naturally didn't set out to be a Glitz group. Like most musicians, they didn't set out to be fitted inside any named box. In fact, they set out to move outside the box, to avoid the labels that get attached to sounds. Occasionally, they do have to plainly describe what music they make.
We were coming back from the airport yesterday and our driver was saying, so what's it like, your music? I said, it's kind of hard, sort of electronic. Sometimes you can play it in a club, sometimes you can listen to it at home. She went, ah, Electric Light Orchestra. And I went, my mum's got loads of their albums. I'd rather look at the albums than listen to the track.
No, but then she said Santana.
And I said, no, it's more tough, it's more electronic. She went, oh, Santana. So, yeah. So it is tough, it's impossible, really.
Yeah. Manchester-based Sean Booth and Rob Brown are Ortequera, which they say can be pronounced in a number of ways, and they have been since the early 90s. You might not have heard of them, but I'm going to say to you, as long as this next bit isn't edited out, they are perhaps one of the greatest, well, I was going to say pop, so I will, one of the greatest pop groups of all time. Odd pop group, though. They started out as disc jockeys with an obsession with radical, demented dance music, and then evolved into musicians melting down or cutting up the fundamentally escapist idea of dance music, smashing up even obliterating beat, and using the mutant beauty of melody as a reflection of desolation. The 12 minutes I spent talking about their sustained ability to produce cryptically titled music that sounds like they've recorded the shredded dreams and nightmares that machines are having about human desire has been edited out. So I'll mention instead that they've been described as the Led Zeppelin of glitch, or that they've ripped apart acid house and early hip-hop and put it back together again as cubist dubbed cult microtonal wrecked funk. There's a genre name for you. Sean and Rob, for all their shadowy distance as a group, are fairly pragmatic about the modern craving for the soothing, classifying guidance of genrefication.
We were electronica at first, and then we were intelligent techno, and then we were IDM.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's largely depends on the journalist's background, what genre they think is most applicable for that day. Techno weirdos or electronic superstars or, well, you know, sort of odd combination of words that don't really make sense. But
You spend all this time spreading your wings, getting yourself known for as much freedom as possible, creative freedom, and then someone's clipping them back, you know. Oh, it's just this tiny little parcel of information that's supposed to describe a world of ideas, if you like, and it tends to just describe one or two elements in most people's heads, you know.
Do you note the influence on people who come to see you from the way you've been described or defined by a genre name, or is it more fluid than that?
It's a bit more fluid than
that. But it has a bearing on it, definitely.
We'd just been around America and there were loads of young people and they were reacting in a really odd way. They were kind of stood round and it was like they were on a roller coaster. Whenever something exhilarating happened, they'd all go, yes, woo! But they were just standing there. It was like a complete non-raver crowd. To us, it was like really kind of new and alien and exciting, but it was weird. We felt free to do what we wanted creatively, but we weren't getting a reaction we were used to. It's a strange one, because there's a lot more girls this time, a lot more black people. Partly that's down to social networking and people finding it necessary to show that they're into a wide range of things.
Yeah.
Because you've got on a MySpace page, for example, you know, an opportunity to put down your influences and your tastes, and people like to show diversity, because they want to cover
especially
as many bases as possible.
Yeah.
They want to look that way. And so it's sort of benefited people like us in a way.
Essentially, IDM and then Glitch used the appeal of post-rave techno and hip-hop and the cultural appetite for fresher rhythms and weirder noises to smuggle through challenging sounds and ideas influenced by the avant-garde. Ortequera's direct inspiration was acid house, early hip-hop and techno, and the attempt to absorb and decipher the sonic and mental excitement of this music led them further and further into the intricately experimental.
We'd grown up listening to the weird bits in hip-hop tracks and the fact that these guys had, you know, no equipment and were intensely creative people. I mean, for a brief period in the mid-80s, hip-hop was about using a studio, the same kind of studio the next guy down the road had, but in a madder way, in a fresher way. Hip-hop almost didn't have any identifiable facets other than that it had a bit of rapping or scratching in it, maybe. There was so many new records that were coming out that were fresh. I guess that just sort of made us think that that was what music should be. When it started to stagnate in around 87, 88, 89 with the sampler and everything else, it just became all about loops. we became a lot less interested and started getting into acid house. And but
it caught us at such an age that we were 13 and 14 when hip-hop and electron, there was scratching and turntable stuff. There was BMX, there was graffiti, there was breakdancing, there was the clothing as well. It just all hit us like a wave, and I think we all, us and our friends, responded.
A lot of those movements kind of a personal development thing, where you, if you're on a BMX, say, you're going to just sit outside in the street constantly practicing the same moves until you get it right. And with breakdancing too, you've got that, and both of them also have this element of, if you can come up with something new, then you're going to get ultimately rewarded for it. And hip-hop was very much about that for a while, before it became a flag-waving genre. We were lucky, in a way, in that we'd been influenced by people who didn't have any equipment, and we were trying to make as many different things as we could with hardly any equipment. Nowadays, the chances of somebody getting into that position are really low, given the proliferation of software.
But in a way, that was an advantage for you, I guess, that you you really had to force yourself against limited possibilities to create extensive possibilities.
That was the fun, that was the attraction.
Precisely.
It's like a red flag to a bull, basically, those apparent limitations, because it was like, well, what wire can go into what socket, you know? It's electricity, there's got to be something happening somewhere in one direction or another, let's just turn the gear on and try all these silly things out, unspecified things with this gear, and found latent possibilities in nearly every device we had. And didn't really look for anything expensive. Like, a lot of friends were going, oh, well, I'm going to buy this big thing, I'm going to save up for this. And we just made sure that we pooled our resources and kept it small and understood every single bit of gear we had as deeply as we knew how.
Paul Morley's Guide to Musical Genres.